we do have a revenue impact statement.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to open up the Committee for Judiciary, Senate Judiciary, for this morning. I want to thank everyone for being, understanding. I had a conference that I needed to participate by phone, and that's why we're starting a little bit late. We did schedule this originally for 8:30, but we re-noticed it for 8:45. For those who got here early, I apologize that we didn't start on time as we had it posted prior to yesterday. So with that, we're going to start with, we're going to start with an introduction. And Stephen Cade. Mr. Cade, why don't you come on up here for a minute? I'm just going to put you on the hot seat just real quickly here. Introduce Stephen. Stephen is going to be one of our interns that will be working here with Judiciary. Stephen, I understand you're at University of Oregon's Law School.
That's correct, sir.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what year are you in your program?
Good morning. My name is Stephen Cade. I'm a second-year law student at the University of Oregon, originally from Beaverton. I'm up here for the semester working on Wednesdays in Bill Taylor's office.
All right. And your focus as to when you complete your degree, do you have a vision of where you want to be in 1 year, 5 years?
I'd like to be... I have no idea, sir.
Gainfully employed?
Probably.
Well, hopefully the experience will be good for you. We really, really appreciate your willingness to come forward. I would tell you that I may be your senator, depending on where you live. I know the law school, ironically, is not in my district. There's a two-block section of the fiscal layout of University of Oregon that's actually in Bill Morissette's. And instead of putting the line down the alley, they put it down the street. And so I lost the law school and one other. So anyway, at home, I might represent you at work or at school. I don't. But thank you very much for being part of the process. Without interns such as yourself, it makes it much more difficult for all of our staff to do this. And so hopefully we'll see a lot of you.
Thank you, sir. Happy to serve.
With that, we're going to go ahead and start a public hearing, and we're going to start with opening a Senate Bill 270 public hearing. We have Mr. Miller that's here. Bruce, why don't you come on forward? And Council, why don't you give us a quick overview of this so we can have some framework.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill comes to us from the Judicial Department and clarifies that the Chief Justice has authority to establish procedures for closing courts in emergencies. Clarifies that the circuit judge or the presiding circuit also has a similar authority and does a series of other things that are technically in the nature of housekeeping.
All right. Mr. Miller?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm a senior staff counsel in the Office of the State Court Administrator. We have sunrise this morning. I hope you all got to see it. It's a good way to start the day. Each interim judicial department takes in suggestions from judges, trial court administrators, and staff on how we can improve court administration. We take the best of those suggestions and we put them into a housekeeping bill, which is what you have before you today. Senate Bill 270 has nine sections in it. It accomplishes things in three broad areas: emergency situations, process for fees, and process for judgments. Section 1 makes explicit in statute the Chief Justice's authority to establish procedures for closing courts during emergency. This is of particular importance for parties who have cases that are running up against a type of statute of limitations, because if the court closes, they cannot file. That problem is actually taken care of in ORCP 10A and 174.120, but we think it's important that the Chief Justice's authority on this being statute so that people can see that. Section 2 is another emergency-related issue. This one really came to the forefront in the December 2007 storms that devastated the North Coast. The problem that we're trying to address here is that there is no statutory mechanism for a presiding judge to delegate his administrative powers to anyone else in the court. So we're suggesting that the presiding judge be able to make that delegation either to another judge in the court or to the trial court administrator. In the December 2007 instance, communications were taken down. We had judges who were isolated, and we think it's important to be able to have people in place if the presiding judge is unavailable to take those administrative steps that are necessary to deal with the emergency. Section 3 goes to a collections issue. The way the statute requires the courts to assess a collection fee. The fee that's authorized under statute captures the costs of Department of Revenue in collecting and the costs of a private agency in collecting. We would like to expand that because the department also has costs in collecting those, in doing those collections. And so what this concept does is it also captures our costs into that fee, and that would be assessed in those cases where collection is necessary. Section 4 is similar to what's already in place for circuit court filings. As you may know, when you file a petition or a complaint in circuit court, you have to pay a filing fee. The statutes are very specific that that fee must be paid when the document is filed. Last session, the legislature gave the Chief Justice authority to charge a fee for certain motions and responses. Unfortunately, in that statute, we didn't specify when the fee needed to be filed. This suggestion is merely to state that you need to file it at the time. You need to pay the fee at the time you file the motion, consistent with all the other statutes on filing fees for circuit court. Section 5 arises from a long-standing practice that many of our counties and judicial districts have had, where the courts collect the sheriff's service fee on behalf of the sheriff's department. This is beneficial to the courts, and it's especially beneficial for the sheriffs because it's one less thing that they have to do. We're taking in the filing fee anyway. What happened in 2007 was that the waiver and deferral statutes were rewritten, and there was a change in wording in that rewrite that had the unintended consequence of excluding the sheriff's fee from that statute. We're just adding that back in so that the process will be the same as it was before 2007. The courts will be able to continue to collect those fees and take all steps necessary. Section 6, 7, 8, and 9 take us into the judgment area. The judgment statutes were rewritten in 2003 and with a fairly significant rewrite that took a lot of energy. As time has gone on, we have found little things that were missed during the rewrite that we correct as time goes on. The way the judgments are structured, you can have a limited judgment, a general judgment, or a supplemental judgment. A limited judgment will come before the case is over, perhaps in the instance where there are multiple claims in a case and one claim is decided. You can have a limited judgment as to that claim and go forward with the others. The general judgment takes care of the entire case. That's the conclusion of the case in a general judgment. But sometimes things happen after the general judgment is entered, so there's a process for a supplemental judgment for new things that have arisen. For instance, in a garnishment situation. What we found is that parties sometimes have confusion over how to label their judgments, and that causes problems with how to interpret the judgments. This makes clear that the supplemental judgment is for things that arise after the general judgment. Section 7 is specific to the garnishee situation. Again, there's been confusion over what type of judgment should be entered in the garnishment situation. This makes clear that in certain circumstances, if you have a judgment against the garnishee, it is a supplemental judgment because there's already a general judgment in the underlying case. Section 8 deals with a statute on accusatory instruments. It allows dismissal of an accusatory instrument. ORS 18.005 defines a judgment as something that concludes a case. ORCP 67 defines an order as an intermediary decision within the case. The statute that we're looking at says that the order is the document that dismisses the accusatory instrument. But what we're doing is resolving the case. So it shouldn't be, we don't believe it should be called an order. We think it's more appropriate under the statutory scheme to call it a judgment. So that's what that change is. And Section 9 is the statute right after that. It deals with the same issue on the accusatory instrument, conforms the wording to what I just described to you. And that's what I have for you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Questions? Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This, in your first line of your testimony, you say this is a housekeeping bill, and it's basically clarifications and corrections, and you have an emergency clause on it, sir. An emergency clause on a housekeeping bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Witzel, that's right, and there are two reasons why we put the emergency clause in there. One is because of the ongoing confusion with the judgments. We feel that it's very important to get that corrected sooner than later, because the judgment is probably the most important document that a party gets in a lawsuit. And if there's confusion there, it can cause difficulties for the party in collecting their judgment. The other reason is because of the two sections that deal with emergency situations. We never know when the next emergency is going to arise, and we feel it would be important, especially for delegating the presiding judge authority, that we have that piece in place.
It just seems, a comment, it just seems a little strange that we're rushing to fix something that was so unclear in the previous statute that we didn't have enough time to flesh it out. I mean, it seems like perhaps we should be moving some more slowly and more deliberately, so we don't make these unintended mistakes.
It'd be nice to be able to have everything perfect the first time, that's for sure. Other questions? All right, if not, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 270? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing. And what I'm going to do is go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 270. And what the intention of the chair, based on my understanding of these three bills, and counsel, correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that everything's gone down to revenue as well as for fiscal. We've gotten reports back saying that there's no impact and that they are ready to proceed if the committee wants to vote them out today.
Mr. Chair, on two of the bills, no impact. On one of them, it has minimal fiscal impact, and that's on Senate Bill 268.
Okay.
So, for past practices, any guidance, that all three can move on the committee.
All right. So, it's also the chair's intent. There's a, let's say, tradition here that our junior members, as compared to saying younger members, get to carry the first bills out.
And more junior than I am. I just want to make sure.
But guess what, Senator?
There's three of them.
I have three bills today, and I have three people. And I can also tell you that we also have kind of a hierarchy. And it just happens the one that you pointed to is vice chair. So just keep that in mind as we work through this. So we are going to go ahead and open the work session on Senate Bill 270. And the chair will entertain a motion on Senate Bill 270.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 270 to the floor with a due pass. I'd be delighted to carry it.
Senator Volk has made a motion to send Senate Bill 270 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Now, to my good vice chair, you're more than willing to take this one if you want to. You'll get one of these three, but since you are, let's say, vice chair, I was going to give you your option if you wanted this one or if you potentially wanted one of the other two.
Mr. Chair, I can explain this one. The other two I'm not sure about.
All right, so the suspense is still there for the other two members. Senator Volquist will be our carrier on this bill. Thank you. We're all going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 268. And Council, why don't you give us a little overview on that one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 268 comes to us from the Judicial Department, and it relates to the ongoing program on e-court, authorizes the Chief Justice to require persons before the court to submit data in such a way that the information supplied allows the court to distinguish one person from another. allows the Chief Justice by rule to exclude from disclosure the information received unless good cause is shown that the information should be disclosed. I assume that's a privacy issue in certain circumstances, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
All right, thank you. I'm going to call up Judge Marcus and Mr. Bray. Thank you very much for both of you being here. Good morning, Judge Marcus and Mr. Bray. I'm not sure how the presentation is going to go. I'll let you start off however you'd like to do it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, briefly, this bill is designed to give the Chief Justice the rulemaking authority he needs to make those rules require people to provide us the information that we need to link persons in our database. Linking persons in our database across the judicial information system is critical to much, if not all, but at least most of the benefit that eCourt delivers. And the benefit has to do with the efficiency of processing cases, of accessing information that relate to the same person. And in order to be able to link people within our database, we may need to ask people to include information that they wouldn't otherwise be submitting when they file cases, either electronically or otherwise. The rules may require information that parties haven't already provided to the courts for that purpose. The section allows the chief to exclude from public disclosure that information that comes through such rules, which is not already required by state or federal law to be made public. And this is to protect against the unintended consequences of assisting in identity theft or invasions of privacy on the part of crime victims, for example. But we feel, as the Criminal Justice Commission mentioned in its public safety report 2001, that it's critical for us to be able to track offenders to the criminal justice system, but it's also critical for us to be able to link the parties who have an interest in a case for purposes just of internal efficiencies, that we schedule hearings, appoint counsel, no children involved in a family law situation that might be involved in a dependency case, prospective parents who may be involved in a criminal case, that we're able to access this information and not do the harm that ignoring it can create. It also assists in us having the most valuable exchange of data with criminal justice partners and with business users of the court information, all to everybody's ultimate benefit. So we urge support of Senate Bill 268.
Thank you. Mr. Bray.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Doug Bray. I'm the trial court administrator for the Circuit Court of the State of Oregon for Multnomah County. This bill comes and deals with an issue that the Legislative Assembly and the courts have been trying to deal with, I think, realistically over at least the last three or four sessions, and that is the emerging strong need for a right to privacy, and yet as our reliance on the court system to resolve a great deal of the commercial disputes and the public safety disputes, we need greater and greater certainty about the identity of the individuals before us. The OGIN system, conservatively right now, has over 16 million cases in it, and some multiple of that in terms of parties. And as we move into the eCourt environment, that statewide database will only serve us if we can reliably use it as a person-based system as well as a case management system. And this bill allows the Chief Justice to make rules so that we have necessary information in order to identify persons all across the system. We think this bill will make it more efficient in terms of both the civil cases as well as in the domestic relations, juvenile, and criminal areas, the public safety areas especially.
Thank you. I'm going to open up for questions. I will note for Senator Wissett, I don't see an emergency clause on this one. I think this is our first one. So Are there any questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Bray and Judge Marcus, for explaining this. Could you please give us an example of the type of data that may be needed to... is it a situation where you might have John Smith and John Smith, or is it a little more complicated than that in terms of what kind of data you're looking for in this?
Senator Bonamici, members of the committee and chair, we have literally experts working on developing exactly what information we need to link data. We've learned that names and dates of birth are not enough. It may very well be that Department of Motor Vehicle numbers, Social Security numbers may be necessary in order for us to accomplish the linking. So, and it's not just parties, by the way, but we're after whatever information our experts tell us we need to include in the data we collect in order to be able to accomplish the linking.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, just to make sure I clarify, and I don't need an answer that or not, but in linking all of that data at the same time, we need to prevent identity theft. So the serial Social Security numbers and the authority to redact, for a better word, I don't think that's the right word, to redact portions of the Social Security number, portions of the driver's license, is in the bill to protect identity theft, too.
Yeah.
So it's not only link it, but then once it's linked, to protect the individual so that there's no identity theft.
All right.
Senator, Chair, members of the committee, the bill allows the chief to address the issues that are somewhat difficult because in serving the needs of, say, the business community for its ability to make sure they've got the right person for a judgment that they want to go collect or enforces a lien on real property, they want the Social Security number, and yet Social Security numbers are a point of vulnerability. And to the extent that something is already required to be public by state or federal law, this doesn't change that. What it does do is allow the Chief Justice to accommodate the varying interests. And one of the ways that we will have to do it in e-court anyway is to vary the degree to which users can access information. For example, the attorneys in a juvenile case may be able to get information that's not public about juvenile dependency and delinquency cases because they're connected to the case. Business users may have a legitimate need that allows them, that justifies their access to information that would not be required to be made available to the public as a whole.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman of the committee. Judge Marcus, I know we've discussed this issue in the past. Will this allow us to trace people to, say, certain treatment programs and then check once they're out of those treatment programs whether they've come back into the criminal justice system?
The council members, the committee chair, it is certainly a step in that direction. The degree of our ability to track people outside the agency, outside our agency, depends on a related project, which is the partner integration, we call it partner integration or data exchange project. But in order to track anybody, even within our system, we need to be able to link them so that if a new case is generated under a different name or slightly different date of birth, we can say, this is still the same guy, this was a failure because we were treating this guy, we want to keep him from stealing due to his drug problem, here he is dealing drugs, we need to know it's the same guy and dealing with him. As to which dispositions work best, to the extent that we can distinguish among them within our database, we can do that. But we also need to share the data with folks who are our treatment providers, are in the business community, all the areas that we interact with, both efficiently and accurately, so we know we're talking about the right people. But the short answer is yes.
Thanks.
All right. Any other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen, for giving your testimony today. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 268? Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 268. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 268. And Chair would entertain a motion regarding movement of this bill.
I'll move Senate Bill 268 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Dingfelder moves Senate Bill 268 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussions? Any objections? No ordered. So now this brings us to who will be the next carrier. And the the chair's prerogative is to offer Senator Bonamici first choice, since she's actually a returning member, whether she wants this bill or she would like to wait for the next one.
I'd be honored to carry this bill, Mr. Chair.
So ordered.
Thank you.
So the anticipation is now building for the last bill.
Here we go. Open up and see. What is it you get to carry?
All right. So let's go ahead and open a public hearing on the last bill we have scheduled today, Senate Bill 271. And it looks like we have Mr. Miller coming back up and Judge Brycall. I apologize.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 271 comes to you from the Judicial Department. It clarifies that the filing for filing a petition, the tax court is due at the time of filing. Actually, someone went to court over this issue. Allows the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to set fees for copies of tax court records. Prohibits the Chief Justice from charging for the location or inspection of tax court records or for the charging of services otherwise excluded by statute. Limits the copying fee to 25 cents per page. Allows an additional fee to be charged, but only to the extent authorized by ORS 192-440.
All right, thank you. Gentlemen, whoever wants to start the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Henry Breithaupt. I'm the judge of the Oregon Tax Court, and I will take the shorter of the two points, which is the clarification in the statute that the filing fee for filing a complaint in the court, which has always been clear that there is a filing fee, that filing fee be paid at the time of the filing of the complaint. A case occurred recently where someone had not done that. They challenged. The court ruled that the filing fee under the rules of the court did indeed have to be paid at the beginning, which is similar to the rule that's in the statute for the circuit courts. That was litigated. The Supreme Court affirmed the court and said that's true. We would suggest, the court would suggest that addition of this language to the statute will be helpful in that the person's reading the statute will have it clearly stated, this is the time you pay.
Thank you. Ms. Miller?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm a senior staff counsel in the Office for the State Court Administrator. Section 2 of the bill addresses miscellaneous fees that may be charged by the tax court. Pursuant to ORS 305.405, the tax court has the same powers as a circuit court. The fees that may be charged by a circuit court, the ones that aren't set out in statute, are established by Chief Justice order and have been in place by that order since 2002. Our intent here is to make sure that it's clear that the tax court may charge the same fees as the circuit court, and this covers things like non-sufficient funds, checks that are returned, and that type of thing.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 271? Not seeing any. We'll close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 271, and the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, move SB 271 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Rollcrest moves Senate Bill 271 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussions? Any objections? So order. And Senator Dingfelder, I think you're the carrier on this one.
Mr. Chair, I'll be honored to carry my first bill out of Judiciary to the floor.
Thank you. Just remember, this does deal with tax court.
As long as Mr. Taylor's there to support me in case it gets contentious, I'm happy to carry it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, do you want me to be there? Or?
we'll talk about it. I think you have a previous engagement whenever that bill goes to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Barker is going to need your assistance on the House side on that day. All right. So that takes care of the business that we have. We do want to go over a couple of logistics. Tomorrow we have scheduled a visit to the Department of Corrections. And, Council, Bill, why don't you walk us through as to what the plan is so everyone knows where they're supposed to be and all that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'll be meeting outside at 12:30, right outside here, in front of the building where the horseshoe is, to go to the Department of Corrections in vans.
for anyone who's going, we'd like you to be able to leave, so don't wear denim. And otherwise, if you have staff that wants to come, let us know. They'd be glad to take them also. We do need their identification, like licenses and things like that.
Yeah.
And this is say.
And you need that ahead of time, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and what I was going to say, if you could check with your members or your staff who may be interested, get this information to Courtney. I think she was coordinating it based on the email that I saw. And we need to have that before the end of the day so they can do the processing to make sure all that's done. And on a very serious note, it's one of those situations that's very sobering for those who have not been through that through an incarceration facility. And at the same time, it's one of those situations that we need to go through the safety measures, and it's very important that people understand the do's and don'ts. And so if you'll review that list, and it's a very good experience for those who have not had that opportunity.
Chair, could I add, also on Friday, we are having a trip to Creek in Albany, which is the youth authority facility just opened up for young girls. We're also going today, and I know none of you can make it because we put this on at short notice. We're going to Hillcrest. If anyone can make it, we're leaving at 12:30 from the same place, and this is something we put together in another couple of day notice because of the opening we had on the House schedule. We are also talking to the Department of Corrections for later trips to the women's facility at Coffee Creek. If you're interested, we'll be back to you on that. Next week, I think the date is Thursday, we'll be doing something with the local court on dependency, hearing both from DHS on foster care and then hearing from the courts on how dependency proceedings are handled. That's always an issue. It's very sensitive. It's always before the legislature. So we will be doing these throughout the beginning months of session. Right. If you could make it. We know your schedules are very booked.
Mr. Chair and Council Taylor, do you know what time we're anticipated to return from the Oak Creek?
From Oak Creek? We'll try to arrange it. We can either, if Chair Members of the Committee, Senator Bonamici, not only will we have a van, but we'll get directions, so people have to get back early. We're budgeting about 4 hours for these meetings outside the building. Now, I realize that conflicts with schedules. And, for example, this afternoon we talked about having two vans and one van coming back earlier, and we'll also get directions for anyone that wants to drive down and make arrangements that way.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
Just, Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify, we're going to be done tomorrow at what time, since we have other committee hearings tomorrow?
Yeah.
Tomorrow, this is what I can tell you, that for myself and for Senator Dingfelder.
Well, he's on the same committee.
Oh,
so
all three of us.
Right.
Same boat.
Yeah. Thinking of going for a shorter period of time so we can be back in time for that committee.
Carpool together.
So, yeah.
Just let us know. I mean, we're going to the penitentiary tomorrow, which is just down the street.
Yeah. So we'll cover this off the record as to the logistics. So with that, we'll close today's hearing and thank everyone for being here.
Yeah, so
let's wait till the thing goes off. Courtney?